The Tom Woods Show, episode 729.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
If you're a homeschooling parent and you're tired of running yourself ragged, then check out the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum. And check it out through my special link where you get three free bonuses totaling $160. My special link, ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm going to do two things on this episode. The first part of the episode is going to deal with the whole EpiPen controversy and the rise in price of the EpiPen. And isn't this price gouging and terrible? And doesn't this show the free market is terrible and antisocial and all that? We're going to address that first. But if all goes well, the second part of the episode will be far more memorable. I'll just put it that way. I've got a surprise for you. It's not at all what you're expecting. It's nothing like what you're expecting. Well, on the other hand, depending on what I write in the description of this episode, maybe you are expecting it. Don't look at the description yet if you haven't, because we're going to have some fun in the second part of the episode. So let's dive in. I was going to invite the author of the article I'm talking about here to come talk about it with us, and we were told that he doesn't do interviews. So it's a guy named Scott Alexander, which is actually a pseudonym. His name is similar to Scott Alexander. I'm going to link to his article at tomwoods.com/729, and it's about the whole EpiPen thing. And of course, you know, I think a lot of people, a lot of libertarians were caught off guard by this because we don't know, in terms of having to answer for this, anytime anybody in the private market does something, libertarians have to respond to it. And there's no particular reason that any one of us would happen to know the ins and outs of the EpiPen market. Why would we? So I didn't know anything about it. Well, here's what's going on, and that's why I think you'll like this particular article. The EpiPen, I'm sure most people know, it's a little thing, you know, it's got a pointy end, and you into yourself, and it can reverse potentially fatal allergic reactions. Well, recently the price of these things went up by four times, and this was, of course, trotted out as an example of everything that's wrong with healthcare in America. There isn't enough regulation. Now, by the way, that was said by the news site, more or less news site, Vox, saying that this is a story about America's unique drug pricing policies. We let drug makers set their own prices and maximize profits the same way the sellers of chairs, mugs, shoes, or any other manufactured goods would. So Scott Alexander asks the kind of question that I would ask, Vox. You know, it's funny you mentioned chairs, mugs, or shoes. When was the last time the chair industry in America raised the price of chairs by 400% and nobody in America could afford to sit down? When did that happen? When was the last time the mug industry suddenly decided to charge $300 per mug? And so everybody had to basically put his face directly into the coffee pot now to be able to consume coffee. Or when was the last time shoe manufacturers made shoes so expensive that we all had to walk around barefoot? Oh, wait, did you say never? So why would that be? Why would that be? These are all unregulated industries, and yet we seem to get by just fine. So maybe the problem with the pharmaceutical industry is not that they're unregulated the way mugs and chairs and shoes are. Maybe there's something a little deeper. The problem, says Scott Alexander, is that they're part of what is indeed a heavily regulated system, a crony system, that works totally differently from the way markets for chairs and mugs work. Because, he says, imagine as a thought experiment, a chair company that suddenly decides to charge $300 a chair. Well, what would happen? What would be the outcome of that? People would see the higher than normal profits and jump into the chair industry, obviously. More people would start making chairs. Other people would set up shop, make chairs, and sell them for maybe $250. But that still leaves a huge, huge profit on the table. That would still be drawing more entrants into the field. So other people would come along and sell chairs for $225 or $200 or $150, all the way until the price of chairs became normal once again. This is the role of profits in a free economy. People would increase the supply. There would be more people in that field up to the point where the higher than normal profits finally disappeared, because now there's so much supply, there's no way you could possibly get away with charging such a high price for chairs anymore. So, and then if, by the way, people produce more chairs than are necessary, more, and the price goes way, way down, then people start making losses in the chair industry. You get people leaving the chair industry, and that pushes profits back up to a normal level. So the point is, if you had some kind of bizarre increase in prices in a market like chairs, I mean, this is a market that Vox chose as an example. If you have that happen, the result is more companies jump into that industry, and that pushes the price back down. Now, when EpiPens were suddenly being sold for four times the original price, why didn't we see other companies suddenly producing EpiPens and selling them for less? It's not that hard to do, it turns out. Well, why don't they? The answer is that they try, and the FDA won't approve them. So he goes on to give some examples of this. So he talks about a pharmaceutical company in 2009 that announced a plan to sell EpiPens in the U.S., but the original EpiPen makers sued them and said, "We have patented the idea of epinephrine injecting devices." Well, the company fended off that attack, brought their product to the FDA, and it was rejected. 2010, another group tries to get permission to sell a generic EpiPen. Yet again, the original manufacturer is sued for patent infringement, and as of July of this year, that litigation is ongoing. There are other examples. There's also a company that decided to try to get around this patent, you know, for epinephrine injecting devices, and just say, well, what if we sell pre-filled epinephrine syringes and we let the patients just inject themselves with these? So the FDA rejected that. And it said that it's great that you've run some studies, you've got to run some more studies. And then also, as Alexander points out, throughout all this, a bunch of companies are merging and getting bought out by other companies and making secret deals with each other to retract their products, and it's all really complicated. Now, none of this is because EpiPens are just too difficult to make. There are eight different kinds in Europe, he says. But it turns out that only one competitor has ever made it past the FDA and onto your shelf, and that is a system called Adrenaclick. But, and now here's Alexander, of course there's a catch. With ordinary medications, pharmacists are allowed to interpret prescriptions for a brand name as prescriptions for the generic, unless doctors ask them not to. For example, if I write a prescription for Prozac, a pharmacist knows that I mean anything containing fluoxetine, the chemical ingredient sold under the Prozac brand. They don't have to buy it directly from the Prozac trademark holder. It's like if someone asks for a Kleenex and you give them a regular tissue, or if you suggest putting something in a Tupperware but actually use a plastic container made by someone other than the Tupperware Corporation. EpiPens are protected from this substitution. If a doctor writes a prescription for EpiPen, the pharmacist must give an EpiPen brand EpiPen, not an Adrenaclick brand EpiPen. This is apparently so that children who have learned how to use an EpiPen don't have to relearn how to use an entirely different device. Hint, jam the pointy end into your body. And then he continues, if you know anything at all about doctors, you know that they have way too much institutional inertia to change from writing one word on a prescription pad to writing a totally different word on a prescription pad, especially if the second word is almost twice as long. And especially, if it's just to do something silly like save a patient money. I have an attending who, whenever we're dealing with anything other than a life or death matter, just dismisses it with, nobody ever died from X. And I can totally hear him saying, nobody ever died from paying extra for an adrenaline injector. So Adrenaclick continues to languish in obscurity. All right, so let's try to summarize what the problem seems to be with getting an inexpensive competitor here. Now, by the way, in recent days, Mylan has agreed to a generic substitute that would be vastly less expensive. But that doesn't, I mean, I still want to deal with the original problem. So what's been the obstacle? Now, one thing that Alexander points out is he talks about the money Mylan spends every year on lobbying, and he gives some details about that. But what I like is his further analogy. He says, Imagine that the government creates the Furniture and Desk Association, an agency which declares that only IKEA is allowed to sell chairs. IKEA responds by charging $300 per chair. Other companies try to sell stools or sofas, but get bogged down for years in litigation over whether these technically count as chairs. When a few of them win their court cases, the FDA shoots them down anyway for vague reasons it refuses to share, or because they haven't done studies showing that their chairs will not break, or because the studies that showed their chairs will not break didn't include a high enough number of morbidly obese people, so we can't be sure they won't break. Finally, Target spends tens of millions of dollars on lawyers and gets the okay to compete with IKEA, but people can only get Target chairs if they have a note signed by a professional interior designer saying that their room needs a comfort-producing seating implement, and which absolutely definitely does not mention chairs anywhere, because otherwise a child who was used to sitting on IKEA chairs might sit down on a Target chair the wrong way, get confused, fall off, and break her head. Parentheses, you're going to say this is an unfair comparison because drugs are potentially dangerous and chairs aren't, but 50 people die each year from falling off chairs in Britain alone, and as far as I know, nobody has ever died from an EpiPen malfunction. Imagine that this whole system is going on at the same time that IKEA spends millions of dollars lobbying senators about chair-related issues, and that these same senators vote down a bill preventing IKEA from paying off other companies to stay out of the chair industry. Also, suppose that a bunch of people are dying each year of exhaustion from having to stand up all the time because chairs are too expensive, unless you've got really good furniture insurance, which is totally a thing and which everybody is legally required to have. And now imagine that a news site responds with an article saying the government doesn't regulate chairs enough. All right, some fun stuff linked at tomwoods.com/729. All right, here is what is about to happen. I want to tell you guys about something that happened to me the other day. I had about a 45-minute drive. And during that drive, somebody called and left me a voicemail message. I didn't take the call, but I looked at the message because I get it translated into text. And when I saw it, I wound up pressing play on the message. So it was a message that was left in a woman's voice, but in a kind of robotic woman's voice of the kind you might hear, say, on a GPS. And it was telling me that the IRS was about to file suit against me for back taxes, and that if I wanted to try to resolve this matter, I should call their number. Well, this is obviously fraudulent. I mean, the IRS does not sue you for back taxes. So I'm sitting in the car anyway, and I figured, what the heck? You know what? I'll call these people. I just want to see what they're going to try to do. I want to see the innards of the scam. So I call them up because I figure what they're probably doing is phishing for personal information they can use for identity theft, something like that. So I call them up. And I don't want to give you all the details. I don't want to give you all the details. But I call them up, and a guy with a very thick Indian accent answers. And he answers, you know, basically like, hello, IRS. Like it's ever been that easy to get the IRS on the phone. You just call them, and they just pick up the phone and answer. So I played along, and I told him I'd gotten the message, and I wanted to see what we could do to resolve it. And I talked to a guy who, in this thick Indian accent, introduced himself to me as Kevin Peterson. Now imagine a guy speaking in the thickest Indian accent you've ever heard, introducing himself to you as Kevin Peterson. So I said, well, now hold on just a minute here. I don't mean to be insensitive, but you don't sound like the other Kevin Petersons I've had the good fortune to know. Well, what is your real name? And he paused and he said, you want to know my real name? And I said, yes, I do. And he said, my real name is F.U. something something. So I shouted, I win. And I hung up. Well, that was so thrilling and fun. I called him back. I'm going to give another one of their phone people a hard time. I called again. This guy was also named Kevin. Different person, but he was also named Kevin. So I let him go through and tell me all the trouble I was in and that they were suing me, the IRS. And I said, well, wait a minute. According to you, you conducted a secret audit that you did not inform me of and that I was not allowed to be present for. And I listed all the irregularities. And I said, it sounds like I should be suing you. And he was flustered and confused and eventually hung up. Okay. Called back a third time. Third time, the guy was real. It's a different guy. A third guy. Different guy. Very angry at me because I interrupted him. He was trying to read his script to me, and I interrupted him. He began, though, by saying that he was calling to get information about my lawyers so that they could, you know, in advance of the lawsuit. And of course, what he's expecting me to say is, oh my goodness, no, 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 what can we do to stop this? So I said, yeah, it's Weikert and Gasper in Topeka, Kansas. Would you like their number? Of course, that's the last thing he doesn't want that. In fact, he even said, I don't want that. Of course not. He wants information from me. So we had some fun, and I told them, if you're going to run a scam, at least make it plausible, for heaven's sake. And I finally said to him, by the way, can I talk to somebody who's not named Kevin? Seems like you got a lot of Kevins there. So he shuffles some papers a bit, and I kid you not, he says to me, I am Stuart Connor. And I said, yeah, you sound like Stuart Connor. So what I'm going to do right now is, I thought to myself, doggone it, why does this never happen to me when I'm sitting in front of my microphone at home? So now here I am in my little office here. I'm going to call them with you guys listening in. We're going to get them on the line, and we're going to have a little fun with them because people like this are evil. So if it sounds like I'm making fun of them, isn't that the least I should be doing given what they're trying to do to me? So I don't want to hear any complaints here. These people deserve this at the very least. And at the end, I'm going to give you their phone number if you want to have some fun with them too. Now, incidentally, I'm intending to play the straight man here. I really want to take this farther than I did the other day. I want to see, where does the scam ultimately go? What is it that they're actually asking me to do? Because I didn't get that far. I just couldn't take it, and I revealed myself one way or another by, you know, exposing their ignorance of tax law or whatever. But this time, I want to try and be reasonable for as long as I can just to see, where do they ultimately want me to take the money? Now, there is a possibility that having done this three times yesterday, maybe they only had three people there and they may answer and say, wait, it's you from yesterday, forget it, and they may hang up. This may not work. I can't guarantee anything. And I'm also not calling this time from the number they called me at. So we'll have to see if that's a deal breaker. But otherwise, here we go. I'm going to go over to Skype and I'm going to type in their number, which I might as well tell it to you while I'm doing this. 253-203-1849. Okay. Let's make their lives impossible. All right. So I'm calling them. Let's see what happens. I should warn you, there is the possibility of profanity here. These people have absolutely filthy mouths when they discover that you've wasted their time. The things they've said to me and about members of my family are unbelievable. So I'm going to bleep out the really bad stuff, but just be prepared. Maybe this isn't for your kids to hear.
I have some way to help you.
Yes, I received a very disturbing message on my telephone yesterday, and I'm calling to find out what's going on.
Okay, when did you receive our calls, huh?
Oh, I would say yesterday afternoon sometime.
Okay, what is your name?
My name is Thomas Woods.
Okay, Thomas Woods, right?
Yes.
Okay, sir, so did you receive it in the same number that you have calling me?
No, it's a different number. Do you need that?
Uh-huh.
Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, it's...
Okay, Thomas Wood, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So, and your last name is... Can I spell it out, your last name, sir?
Yes.
Okay.
It's Woods, right?
Oh, you would?
Woods.
Okay. Asshole, isn't it?
Nice. Very good. Very good. A lot of my listeners are going to be calling you guys, okay? You're being heard by a lot of people right now.
You are a
Yeah. Have fun. All right. Well, he was apparently on to me. He may have known me from yesterday. So he figured me out pretty quickly once my number was inputted in there. All right, let's see if there's somebody who is more in the dark as to who Tom Woods is. Let's give this another try.
Thanks for calling Internal Revenue Service. How can I help you?
Hi, I'd like to know what's going on here. I'm being sued?
Okay, sir. Did you receive a phone call or voicemail from the same number which you're calling from?
No, it's from a different number, but forget that for a minute. You're telling me I'm being sued because I didn't pay my taxes?
Sir, if you give your number, then only I can verify, okay?
But just tell me, is it possible that I am being sued?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, I'll give you the number. Are you ready?
Okay, tell.
All right, I'm going to give it to you right now. It's...
Is your name is Thomas Woods?
That's right.
Is your zip code is...
That is correct.
Can you tell me your address?
You need my address?
Yes.
Can I... Okay.
I have to verify that I am speaking to the right person.
It's... Street.
Okay.
In Topeka, Kansas. Okay?
Okay, sir. I want you to write down some information.
Okay.
My name is Officer Sam Wilson.
Sam Wilson. That's a new one. Okay. Sam Wilson.
And my badge ID number is 62427.
All right.
98221.
Okay.
529.
Now, are you able to tell me what's going on here?
This is my badge ID number, sir. Okay?
Okay, but I'm getting
and
a message
we call
about...
You to, we call, okay, sir, we call you to collect your attorney information. There are some legal allegation and a lawsuit has been filed against you by IRS. That's all.
I heard that.
But before I process further, I would like to notify you the call which we are talking had been recorded and monitored by IRS as well as local authority. So I will just go ahead and read out the legal affidavits against your name.
All right, please do.
We call you to, as per the document, we conducted an audit on your tax file for the year 2010 to 2015, and we found that there is a miscalculation error, and the tax that you filed does not match the tax record that we have. According to Section 101, the amount is still outstanding on your name that you have not paid. For the reason, the IRS has filed a lawsuit against you. Now, at this point, the IRS decided during a state ID, your driving license will be cancelled and everything under your name, your property, your known bank account, everything will be seized under Section 6331H. You will also face federal imprisonment for up to 5 years and a penalty up to $80,000 to $90,000.
$80,000 to $90,000?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, tell me the rest.
Now the total balance outstanding on your name is $3,500, okay? Which includes your pending taxes, legal charges, and late fees. Now, did you do this intentionally or it was a mistake, sir?
Hold on. I mean, are you going to send me a bill or what am I supposed to do?
Sir, regarding the lawsuit, we have sent you a legal notice in the month of June 2016. Which you have not responded back to us. So may I know the reason why you never responded back to us?
I never received anything.
I will default and say you the same reason, sir.
So tell me what I'm supposed to do now.
So I need to take your statement that what are your fair intentions? Do you want to resolve this problem outside the courthouse without going legally? Or do you want to fight this case legally in the courthouse?
Well, if you were me, what would you do?
If I am right, I will fight this case. If I am thinking that I can do mistake, then I will resolve this matter outside the courthouse, sir.
Let's try that. What would that mean?
Sir, you have to pay that $3,500 to resolve this matter. And, okay?
But if I go to court, how much would I have to pay?
If you have failed in court, you have to pay $90,000.
I get it.
$3,500, okay?
Okay. Now, look, I have to think about this.
And you have to pay this amount from EFTPS, which means Electronic Federal Tax Payment System. You are a defaulted taxpayer for IRS, as there is a lawsuit on your name. We will not be able to accept any kind of cash payment, check payment, credit card payment, or telephonic payment.
Well,
for your end, the only payment method for you will be the EFTPS.
Well, what if I don't have $3,500? What if I have only $2,000?
Okay, sir. Do you have right now $2,000 at your hand?
Yes.
Okay, sir, just hold on a second. I will transfer my call to my senior supervisor. He will help you out to
thank you. Okay.
Resolve this matter. Okay?
Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right, let's see what's going to happen now. It's the first time I've gotten bumped up. So I think I said the password or something.
Your line has been transferred to a federal officer. This is Eric Edwards. How can I assist you today?
Well, I was just talking to another person about paying an amount of money, and I said I don't have that amount of money, but I have a little. I have some.
Sir, like, if you want to take care of this case, then the outstanding is $3,500.
But all I have is $2,000.
So what do you mean?
All I have is $2,000. What do you want me to do? I have only $2,000.
Where you have this $2,000?
In the bank.
In the bank. In, like, in your checking or in your savings?
In checking.
In checking. And how much you have in your savings?
I don't have a savings account.
Okay, and how much you have as a cash?
About $50.
$50. And do you have any other account apart from this checking?
No, that's all I have.
Okay. And how I can believe on you that you have not done this thing intentionally? It was a mistake from your hand?
Because I would never want this to happen to me.
Okay. Now, before I let you know that how you can resolve this thing, I need to guide you with the two conditions, which are the most important conditions attached to a file. So the conditions which I'm going to explain you, you have to follow that conditions. If you're not able to follow that conditions, then I'm not able to provide you any kind of resolvement chance, okay?
All right. What are they?
Okay, now the first condition that the line currently you are talking on, these lines are federally monitored and recorded by the federal government of this United States. So if you want to resolve this case outside of the courthouse, if you don't want to face any kind of legal allegations, we have to play this recording in a federal courthouse in front of the judge and a jury members to let them know that you have not done anything intentionally. It was just a mistake from your hand. So for that reason, till the time everything has been not taken care, you have to stay connected with us. If this line got disconnected, then the option to solve this matter will be closed down for you. Okay?
All right. I agree to that.
All right. Now, the second condition that is called as a non-disclosure agreement. A non-disclosure agreement means that we have not put your name as in criminal or as in defaulter in any kind of police station, or we have not informed to your bank also. Because if we send your four criminal allegations with your arrest warrant to your state, then they will just take the legal action against you and they will put you behind the bars and they will seize your account. So without informing your local government, we are giving you this chance directly outside of the courthouse. So as we are not putting your name as in criminal or as in defaulter in any place, so you also have to keep everything private and confidential with you. So you also have to follow, like, you will not talk to anyone till the time your arrest warrant has been not canceled, till the time everything has been not taken care. So you're going to follow the second condition or not?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, the third thing that, sir, we cannot accept your payment over the phone call to any kind of debit card or credit card details. You have to make this payment by the EFTPS voucher. Once you have the EFTPS vouchers with you, you have to go to a federal building to submit those vouchers. I will give you a federal officer's name and a badge ID and an address that where you have to go and submit that vouchers. Once you get the vouchers, you need to give me the card numbers so I can verify that you have the right card and what is the balance on the card. Once I check that, then I will give you a federal office address where you have to go and submit that. Once you submit it, then you will get your 24 hard copies and everything in your hand, okay?
Okay, I don't think I need 24 copies, but all right.
Why you don't need 24 copies?
I don't know. One copy is probably... It doesn't matter. All right, so what's the next step here?
Like, sir, it will be your miscalculation report and everything, so it will be a 24 hard copies.
I see, okay.
Okay? So now, first you have to go to a Target store to get a Target gift card, which you can submit into the federal building.
So you want me to pay my taxes by means of
I'm an expert, huh?
But you want me to pay my taxes through a Target gift card?
Sir, you are not paying your taxes, okay? You are paying the amount that you have tried to defraud the IRS. So this is not your taxes. So don't try to act smart, okay?
Well, but there's no need for rudeness here. I'm just trying to understand what I'm supposed to do.
Listen. If you don't want to do this thing, then keep your money with you, okay? I'm not working for money.
You're just trying to help me.
Yes, you got it right. I'm just trying to help you out. If you want to take care, then you can. If you don't, then you can simply disconnect the call.
No,
and I will
agree.
Inform
nope.
the attorney.
You're right. You're
this
right.
This person has disconnected the call. You can start the legal procedure. So they will start the legal procedure.
All right. So I get my Target gift card. Then what do I do?
You don't need to argue with me, first of all. I don't work for money, so you don't need to argue with me, okay? If you argue one more time, then I will disconnect the call and I will issue the warrant. All right?
All right.
All right. So now how far the Target is from you? Tell me.
About 20 miles.
About 20 miles. How much time you going to take to reach there?
30 minutes.
Okay, so start driving towards there. And make sure do not put it on mute or any kind of hold. If you put it on any kind of mute or hold, then I will be not able to help you out. I'm making you aware right now. So stay connected so I can listen what you're doing, everything, okay?
Okay. All right, well, I am about to get in the car. So how much money do I put? How much money am I bringing with me?
$2,000. You told that you just have $2,000.
So
right?
you want to take my entire checking account?
Like, so you need to take your debit card and you need to go to a Target. So when you have to get a Target gift card for a $2,000 amount, so you just need to give me a card number and an access number so where I can check the balance that what is the amount you have put on this Target store, on the Target card. Once I check the balance that, yes, you have put this much of money, then I'm going to forward that number to a federal office and to a federal attorneys. So they're going to check everything that, yes, everything has been taken care. After that, they're going to give me a 10-digit confirmation number that, yes, whatever you own to the IRS, everything has been taken care.
Okay.
After that, I will give you a federal office address where you need to go and submit that. Once you submit that, then you will get your 24 hard copies and your cancellation copy of your arrest warrant. All right?
All right. Now, are you telling me, is all of this going to be done today, the same day?
Yes, right now, not same day.
All right. Now, I have only the $2,000. You're telling me even though I owe $3,500, you'll take $2,000?
Yes, sir, because I have to explain to the attorneys right now while you will drive to the bank. Then I will inform the attorneys that he don't have $3,500, but he is willing to take care of this thing. He just have $2,000. So they will tell me that it's okay. And this amount, like $1,500, the rest of the amount, $1,500, you can pay once you get your documentations. Like we can set up some payment arrangement for you, or you can give a next date, like on next month or like in October or in November, I will pay the rest of the balance.
Well, I do have some items that are valuable. I mean, would you accept those? I have some zoo animals that are very large and rare that might be of some value.
No, first, okay, so do one thing. First, get our card of $2,000.
Okay.
So, and then after, you can get that $1,500, okay?
All right, but I mean, I have two elephants and a hippopotamus and a giraffe. Do you think there's any monetary value to those?
I don't know, because I'm not an animal.
I see. Okay, you're just somebody who wants to take all my money, even though you're actually calling me from India, and you wouldn't know American tax law if it hit you in the face, right?
No.
Okay. Your name is Eric Edwards?
Is
that the truth?
Yes.
You know, I don't mean to sound insensitive, but you don't sound like a lot of Eric Edwards I've met.
Uh-huh. What sounds you? Tell me.
Well, I mean, you have an awfully anglicized name, and yet you still have retained an Indian accent. How's that possible?
I don't think so.
Okay, so you want me to pay what I owe to the IRS by means of a Target gift card?
Yes.
That's your scam?
Yes.
You want me to pay by Target gift card?
Yes.
And then I'm going to drive to a federal building, which... Do you know what state I live in?
Sorry?
Do you know what state I live in?
Why?
How are you going to direct me to the right federal building?
I don't know that. What do you mean that? I don't know that where you live.
How can you find the right building for me if you don't know my state?
I know that you are in Kansas.
I moved away from Kansas 2 months ago, genius. Where am I now?
I don't know that.
Okay.
you can give me a zip code, then I will find it out for you.
Wait, so you're still... I've offered to sell you elephants, hippopotamuses, and giraffes, And you still are pursuing this call?
Yes, because I'm having some fun with you.
Well, I'm having some fun with you too, as are all my listeners. So enjoy it while it lasts, my friend, because it won't be going on much longer. All right, I let that go because I really wanted to see where it ends up. What happens when they really think they've got you, and how are they going to try to get your money? And then to find out that it involves a Target gift card was a was quite a revelation, we'll put it that way. So anyway, that was pure self-indulgence on my part, but I just wanted to, after having had some fun with them yesterday, I wanted to sort of play the straight man just to see where it goes. Now, you might not have as much luck as I did because they didn't call you, so they won't find you in their so-called system. But you could still bother them and waste a lot of their time by calling 253-203-1849. And I told one of them that some people may be calling. And man, the profanities are unbelievable coming from these guys. They're just overwhelming. Crazy. All right. Well, enjoy your Labor Day weekend. Remember, the Rocket Languages 60% off deal is going on. First 750 courses are sold at 60% off, but they go really fast. So as soon as you hear this, head on over to tomwoods.com/rocket if you're interested in learning a foreign language, and use code LABORDAY, all one word in all caps. Take 60% off. All right, enjoy your weekend. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.